We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots Podcast. We're your hosts, Shamit Duup and Mason Ginsburg, and this is All Pelicans All the Time.
Welcome to In the Know. We are back after a long hiatus where Mason went on his honeymoon 2.0 and I was goofing off somewhere in New Orleans. Anyways, we are back. We have an episode for you. Seems like we kind of do these things when shit hits the fan. Seems like that's what brings us together, gets us behind a mic. In any case, I'm not even going to bullshit you. I wish I could be like, yeah, I'm fucking excited to be back behind the mic. And I got great content for you. But honestly, I don't have great content. What I have is a fucking rant and a lot of anger and just frustrations. But we'll get into that. We have plenty of time. Mason, how are you?
Great, man. These podcasts are nothing if not eventful. So, you know, whatever it's, whether it's bad news, whether it's good news, it's never just like, okay with this team. It's like 10%, maybe good. And then the other 90% is usually just us talking about bad stuff that happened to them. So just check another check on the box there.
So before the season started, we all learned about Mr. Williamson's foot injury that required surgery. And the whole team was like, he'll be back by opening night before you know it. Nothing to be worried about. Oh, wait, the exact words from David Griffin were, well, not the exact words, but the very close exact words from David Griffin were, this is going to be a very big negative for you guys, but it's not going to be a negative for us because we've been dealing with it all off season. And here we are, it is November and we are 2 to 3 weeks out before he can even begin participating in 5-on-5 before he, if he gets cleared in the next round of scans. If. Wow. You know, and when that media day happened and everyone was surprised about his injury, your boy over here wrote an article on WDSU, which hello. I write there now, apparently, which I haven't done much more of since the season started. But anyways, I wrote an article there. And in that article, I said, you cannot trust this organization to tell you the truth about any injury. It calls into question every single injury, especially regarding Zion. Lo and behold, opening night came. We were told, oh, yeah, he's going to have scans in 2 to 2.5 weeks. He's progressing really well. He's not anywhere close. By the way, we never said he'd be ready by opening night. We just said he'd be back for the regular season, whatever the hell that means. And then it's been 2 to 2.5 weeks, and now it's like, yep, he's continuing to progress. And by continuing to progress, he still hasn't done any 5-on-5s. That's a ton of progress right there. And we'll have more scans in 2 to 3 weeks. So they're just kicking the can down the road. And here we are, all of us, putting all of our clown makeup on and listening to everything that they have to tell us and be like, oh, yeah, okay, cool. We'll wait another 2 to 3 weeks. Is that accurate, Mason? Is that what's going on? Are we the idiots here?
Are we fans of the Pelicans?
I don't know. Are we?
Because that's the answer. Oh man. Well, it's been a day. I share your frustrations. We'll get into it, but it's it feels foolish to continue to trust anything that's come out over the past few weeks.
They're just straight up lying to you. They're a bunch of liars, and they do not care one bit if they insult your intelligence. They do not care one bit that, you know, just telling you over and over, hey, things are fine, things are okay, things are progressing, things are getting better. And yet when you ask for any of the progress, it's always a period of time away. It's always a period of weeks away. And whatever, you know, whatever analysis they did that allowed them to say, you know, he's going to be ready for opening night, clearly was shit. Whatever analysis they did beyond that clearly was shit. So it's either their execution is shit, or they're lying to your fucking face, or both and more. I don't know. I don't really have words. I'm just expressing emotions at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, I think the only thing you missed in that commentary is not doing all their homework before they say something. And so that's, you know, maybe that's not I think there certainly was intentional lying. There could have been some unintentional lying because they didn't do the work ahead of time and trusted information that wasn't good. And the fans are the ones who got hung out to dry as usual. Let's face it. The Pelicans have one priority right now, and that is placating a guy who hasn't touched the floor this season, and we don't know when he will.
And that begs the question, yeah. Why should that be their one priority? Because sure. This guy has not taken care of himself. He has not participated in team stuff over the summer. He did not participate in team stuff during preseason. He barely participated in team stuff up until now. Why should that guy be the one priority, Mason?
The only answer I have for you is because he's Zion. That's it.
And that's exactly the case.
That's it.
Because he is the only player on this roster capable of being that top 10 type talent, capable of leading this team to all the success that it's trying to get to. You're seeing that in these games where the games are ridiculously close and then they just cannot score. They are waiting for their star and all the pieces around him are not complete without him on the floor. And so in their eyes, if they can get through to Zion, if they can get him healthy, they will start winning games, and then the fans will forgive them. That's their gamble. That's what they're banking on. I don't know if it's a good gamble. I understand it. I think as long as, you know, like if it's a tough position to be in as a GM, because as long as you have that type of talent on your roster, you kind of like owe it to the organization to build around that and see what you can do out of it. But man, has it been a fucking chore doing so.
So I guess let's go right into it. Why are you even questioning whether or not it's a good gamble? Not to say that the Pelicans couldn't have done some things better on the communication front, but you know, the whole because he's Zion thing. I mean, that assumes that there was another road to take here. And I guess, was there one? And, you know, in hindsight, is there another approach you would have taken to, as, you know, if you were running the Pelicans to this beyond maybe just a little bit more transparency communication?
I think at least with regards to the injury, they could have absolutely not said anything during media day. They'd be like, he injured it. We'll see. You know, they did not have to put a fucking date on it.
Yep.
And then, okay, let's say they put a date on it. The next round of updates, they easily could be like, hey, you know, this round of scans reveal that this is going to take longer than we thought. And if the whole idea is, you know, and this is kind of the working theory of many who are in the know, that the Pelicans are just kind of bending over backwards to appease Zion's camp in terms of how the information is relayed regarding his injury. Zion's camp would love for Zion's image to be that he's this kind of like invincible dude who is also not fat, and they don't want to draw attention to his weight and all these other things. And by doing so, by controlling what kind of stuff is released about his injuries, they are drawing an immense amount of attention to all the things that they don't want attention to. And, you know, if they just came out and said, yo, this dude is not in shape. And look, the thing is not healing the way it healed. People would be frustrated, but they would not be being lied to. And you can do that without even throwing Zion under the bus. You can just say, hey, man, this is a bone injury and bones are tricky. Sometimes they take longer to heal. Foot injuries in particular, that fifth metatarsal, they have poor blood circulation. So sometimes, you know, they take longer than expected. And we want to do everything that we can to make sure this is not a lingering situation. This is not a returning situation. You can communicate that and be like, this is what the scans revealed, and not throw Zion under the bus. But the thing is, Zion's camp feels like if you communicate that, people are going to point the finger at Zion.
Right.
But they're already pointing the finger at Zion. Exactly. And they should.
That's the thing, is that like what you just walked through is, it's not rocket science. Like it's borderline common sense for a front office. And it's not like Griff and the rest of the you know, key decision makers are oblivious to that fact, that they certainly would be a level of confidence they can spin this in a way that makes sense. The only reason not to is because they're being told not to. I mean, that's at least the conclusion I come to, is that there's no other reason why you would let this play out the way it did. So,
I mean, they don't act this way with any other player, right? And, and there's your evidence right there. Brandon Ingram hip contusion, listed day to day, whatever, you know, there's not a fucking question around that. Nikhil hurt something, you know, he twisted his ankle. They're like, yep, he's going to miss this many weeks. This is where he did. And boom, he's back. Right. And there's never a question regarding anyone else except Zion, because they want to be the fucking Bermuda Triangle and not let anything out, because there's this image that they want to maintain of Zion, not that they being his camp, and David Griffin and the Pelicans organization will do whatever those people want, and you know, until he either A, signs that extension, or B, he tells him he's getting the fuck out of here.
Right. And this is it's a noticeable change from the last, you know, hierarchy in the organization to this one. I mean, that we got used in the Dell Demps era to that lack of transparency. And then suddenly we started getting information. Granted, some of it was BS, but we started getting information and we got used to it. And it was nice. And most of it, you know, beyond Zion, seemed pretty reliable. And now suddenly it feels like we're not only are we back to just no transparency, but just being outright misled. So it's very frustrating, and every single fan has a right to be upset about it, especially the ones paying for tickets.
And I just want to ask, I wish I could give Willie Green a truth serum. I wish I could give like players on the roster a truth serum and be like, are you okay with this? Are you okay with one player being given this much of the exception when it comes to like team rules and procedures, and just one player not being as part of the team the way he's been? Are you okay with this? Are you okay with your having your roster hang in limbo based off of the decisions of one person? And I'm genuinely curious if under the truth serum, some of those people I would say, I think we should just cut bait now and work with the group of people we have because they're playing hard. That doesn't make it like the right decision. I'm just curious if there's people who genuinely feel that way.
Yeah. I mean, well, also that's why that's an example of why the head coach / player basketball or president of basketball operations dual role can be problematic, because maybe Zion gets traded next week if that's the case. But I think that would certainly be a reasonable sentiment for people to have, is, you know, I guess not front office members, but certainly the players or coaches. I wouldn't be shocked if some people feel this way. It feels like a never ending saga, and all the conversations about the dude who's not playing, the dude who's not, you know, working his ass off, versus the team that, by all accounts, forget the record, it's most, I feel like the general sentiment around the Pelicans is that this team's at least really fun to watch. This team's competing, and that's, you know, there's just a Zion size productivity hole in the roster.
Yeah, I mean, there's no good answers here. That's why it's just so annoying that you have to deal with this constantly. The first season of Zion, it was the exact same thing. Is he going to be back by Thanksgiving? Is he going to be back by Christmas? Oh, here's a video of him dunking. Oh, he's doing all this. Or here's him warming up. And like, it's this fucking deja vu where the Pelicans are doing the same thing. Oh, here's Zion shooting free throws with Fred Vinson. Woo! And then there's Willie Green on camera saying, actually, he's not doing shit for another 2.5 weeks and 3 weeks. And so it's just this, I don't know. It's a shit show. That's what it is.
Welcome to Pelicans basketball.
So, because it's a shit show for the first time ever, I'm going to pull a Preston Ellis and call the season. It's over. 6 games in. Shout out Preston, baby. I don't know where you went, but live on through this podcast.
Hell, man.
Time to call the season, and we are starting the tank today. Brandon Ingram, day to day. Love that. Take your time, big guy. Take your time to get healthy. Devontae Graham, new addition, questionable on the injury list. Take your time, man. You got your paycheck. You got your payday, bro. Relax.
If JV plays a second more than 30 minutes in any game, we are rushing the court.
Yeah, man. JV gets in foul trouble. It's okay, man. Look, rest him. Don't let him gamble on that third foul. Two early fouls, it's okay. Let Jackson in there. But on a serious note, if Zion's not, you know, like three weeks puts us to basically Thanksgiving week, right?
Yep.
And that's to determine if he's able to practice or not. So let's assume in a perfect world, which it never is, he's clear to practice. I would assume it's another 2 weeks minimum before he's allowed to get on the floor in an NBA game. And then another 3 weeks or so after that, where he's like played himself into like decent shape. Got his rhythm back. So you're looking at, you're looking at almost 2 months from now. And that puts you into the new year. Zion comes back, I can easily see this team like 2-15, dude. If you know, I don't know how many more games he's going to miss, but like, well, something like that.
If he, so even more up the, in the most optimistic of scenarios. So this is the first thing I was looking at once the news broke this morning. It's like, yeah, so let's say he's 2 weeks. You heard Willie Green, as soon as he said 2 weeks, almost immediately correct himself and say 2 to 3 weeks. And so let's call it 3 weeks until that next scan comes. And even if he's back on the floor practicing with them and can get into the starting, can get back into the lineup playing games by December 1st, which is incredibly optimistic and almost certainly not going to happen. Then give it another 2 weeks from that point, and he's maybe ramped up to full minutes. Again, optimistic. That's 30 games. The most optimistic of scenario, he's missed 29 games. He's back for game 30. I don't see a more more realistic and or more optimistic possibility that's still realistic than being back for the 30th game of the season. And so,
yeah, and like all these people, like, oh, look at the Hawks last year. They had a losing record, and then they, you know, did all this. The Knicks last year, then they traded for Derrick Rose. Bro, this shit ever happens to the Pelicans. I don't know why you're looking at all these exceptions. Yeah, right. Look at every single year the Pelicans have started terribly. Yeah, have they made the playoffs then? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. So, like, I don't know why you're selling yourself into this delusion where, you know, like, oh, Zion's going to come back, and then he's going to lead us to this. Okay, great. Zion's going to come back. Who's going to be healthy at that point? Is he going to be healthy? Is he going to play? Like, what kind of restrictions is he going to be on? And then, man, look, you have true great expiring contracts to trade. You have a $17 million trade exception, which, by the way, you can hold on to until the day after the moratorium lifts next year. So you can do a sign and trade if you wanted to. But again, you have these assets in place. I say you need to start looking at some of these shitty teams and looking at where you can start taking salary off their hands and gaining assets. You're probably going to end up with a top 10 pick again this year. If you're smart, if you're lucky, you can get into the top five. It's not too late to start that shit. I don't care if you don't pick a 19-year-old with that pick. I don't care if you trade it later. That asset is going to be more valuable than any fucking thing you can accomplish this season if Zion misses that amount of time. Am I wrong?
No, you're mostly right. I do have it. All right. If we tie this back to what you said, what we talked about before around what the number one priority here is with Zion and how they messaged all this shit was, you know, prioritizing his camp and his people. I think if you go down that path, even when Zion gets back and don't even make a play at trying to squeak into the play-in tourney. And again, this is very dependent on where they are. Cause they should not do anything in terms of mid-season moves to prioritize the season. None. I want to make that very clear, but beyond that, I think that if you go full bore on tanking, and Zion comes back in like January, and you're like, even within like you're just barely within distance of the 10th seed. I think you have to at least make some sort of effort and not just pack it in.
I get that. Right. You know, if Zion comes back, you have a chance to make a run for the play-in. Sure. Play your dudes who are healthy, try to make for it, but don't you dare trade a fucking pick to try to squeak in.
Absolutely not.
You know what I mean? Yes. Like, you know, I still think you can make a run for the play-in and trade Santoransky and Josh Hart who, you know, for salary and get an asset, because Santoransky is just not even in the fucking rotation right now. And Zion's not healthy. And Josh Hart is already being replaced by Herb Jones. And you already have Najee and all that. Yes, I guess not. I know Najee's been kind of a disaster to start the season, but Josh Hart's importance on the roster diminishes significantly with a healthy Zion. It just does. Yep. And so you could still make those type of trades. Okay, fine. You don't want to use your trade exception. You want to use it to sign and trade for a good player this summer. Fine. Hold on to that. Whatever. But you have a pretty remarkable chance to kind of like reload on your assets here and still just kind of like sell the bullshit hope of you're making a run for the play-in. Because if you know your starting five is healthy, you're going to make that run. And there's not really, you know, like the bench players aren't really going to change things. And if you're able to get a pick out of it, fantastic, man. Fantastic.
Yep.
And then, you know what sucks about this, man? You look at the West. The fucking everything sucks about this. But you just look at the standings in the West. The Grizzlies are 3-3 and they're the seventh seed.
Division's terrible.
Portland is 3-4. Phoenix is 2-3. Yeah, the division is just god awful. There is Houston and New Orleans have combined for one win. San Antonio has double their win total, which is two.
And are getting crushed by the 1-6 Pacers tonight.
God, this was such a blown opportunity. If Zion, I have no doubt that if Zion was healthy, that this record could have been something like 4-2 right now. I guess they've played 7 games, 4-3, whatever. Yep. 4-3 would have been good for tied for 6th with LA.
Yep. Yeah, it's rough. Yeah, when the presumptive division winner hired Jason Kidd, and that's going about as poorly as most people expected it to. It's just like the division was up for grabs, and you know, I think most, despite, you know, I think most objective people seeing the changes in the rosters year over year would at least have put Memphis. You know, we talked about it, I think, a month ago, but what we have better Pelicans at full strength, better roster than Memphis full strength. I don't know how that's debatable preseason. Obviously who cares now. And Ja also looks like a, you know, fucking incredible. But yeah, I mean, again, early season caveat, because weird shit always happens early in the season, but there was, you know, they could have made some noise here, and not anymore, just out the window.
Okay, enough Zion. Let's talk about some of the players on this roster. First of all, on a positive note, Jonas Valanciunas has been absolutely incredible. Dude's a monster. Dude destroys everything in his path. On the offensive end, on the glass, in the post, he's a monster. Excellent pickup, excellent extension. Love that. Can't wait to see him in action for the next 2 years.
A big who can make free throws, and it's going to matter too. Which, you know, whenever the hell you get Zion and him in the front court together, getting the Pelicans into the bonus by themselves, just like, yeah, it's going to be great.
You're not going to be able to do the thing what they did with Steven Adams, was like they just put like a forward on Steven Adams and they put a center on Zion. You're not going to be able to do that. It's going to be murder on the offensive glass. Devontae Graham, very happy with that. He's hitting his threes. He's making ridiculous shots. Yeah, you know, he's inefficient inside the arc, but you know who, what? He's getting a shit ton of Kobe assists. And I think that's another player who's going to pop when Zion comes back. Just his looks are going to get a lot easier.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, and I even think from, like, and granted, I missed the first three or four games because I was still in Europe, and everyone told me do not watch that trash, and so I did not. I like what I saw from Graham's aggressiveness, and I feel like while he still isn't making shots inside beyond the occasional acrobatic finish, it feels, at least I haven't checked the stats on this, but it feels like he's not turning the ball over as much. And he's actually, you know, finding people when he gets in there. And so I'm okay with that, especially like given, like you said, with, you know, him next to JV and Zion, there are plenty of Kobe assists that can come from that. So I'll be watching his turnovers. And I mean, I don't expect much from the finishing rate to improve. I don't think we have any evidence to suggest it will, but taking care of the basketball is one that's going to be, I think, pretty important, at least giving the big men opportunities to finish.
Right. And look, he's not someone who's a primary guard, and he's not going to I don't think he's going to like carry units by himself. He's definitely a complementary piece and a piece that fits really nicely with a guy like Jonas and will fit next to Zion. And so a guy you kind of hoped would take off here was Nickeil Alexander-Walker. And I got to say, Pelicans fans, you got to take the rose-tinted glasses off. Nickeil has been awful. Nickeil has just been a complete mess on the offensive end. He's been a negative on the defensive end. Yes, he's getting steals. Yes, he's getting blocks and deflections. He is out of position all the time. He is struggling to get through screens, just letting random players go off. It's not good. And it's tough because, you know, he's getting to be the guy on the scouting report for the first time in his career. Teams are focusing in on him, which is tough for a young guard. He is also getting to take on stronger defensive assignments while having a greater load on offense himself. That's a tough thing to do for a young guard. So I have optimism that he will improve, but he has been nothing short of a disaster, and it's actively hurting the Pelicans.
99 points and 108 shots for Nickeil so far this year. 18 assists, 10 turnovers. I mean, there's no good way to spin it.
Look, if you took any player in the league and I told you he was taking 8 threes a game and he's shooting 26%, you would say that player needs to stop shooting. People make fun of Westbrook for this stuff all the time. And Nickeil, it's not like he's hitting his twos either. It's only 45% on his twos, 35% overall. Just like over his career so far, you know, you take a look at every single player that's played the amount of games that he's played in, you know, like in the minimum amount of minutes that he's played in, he is amongst the most inefficient in history. And then that's just, that is what it is. And part of that is just the things we talked about, how the game is difficult with Zion out and he's the guy, and things will get easier when Zion's back. Part of that is he's just doing dumb shit constantly. Constantly. I mean, I was courtside at the Hawks game. I was sitting on the baseline right next to the goal, and the goal where the Pelicans were going at in the fourth quarter or in the second half, right? So I saw like the Pelicans offense up close. Literally, there was this one possession. Dude tries to do a 360 no-scope three. It's like he catches it, pump fakes, jab steps, does a 360 pivot, no passes in any of this, and then pulls up for three and completely, I think it was an air ball. It was like a really bad miss. It's like, come on, man. Like, look at the time. Look at the situation. Why is that a good shot at any point? At any point. And you're just making the game unnecessarily difficult for yourself. I think it's just like, it comes off as someone so keen on proving to the world that he's good and he deserves to be out there and he deserves these minutes, and that he not only does he deserve those things, that he's got a ridiculous back. He's a scorer. He's crafty. He wants that attention. And it's come at the expense of doing the fundamental stuff. It's come at the expense of taking the easy shot. It's come at the expense of finding his bread and butter. It's come at the expense of making the easy pass. And I think that's been a challenge with him his whole career. And Stan didn't have any tolerance for that, which is why he was glued to the bench. And now, you know, by the product of the lack of talent on this roster, Nikhil's getting those opportunities and he's just not made much of them.
Yeah, and I think the thing that stresses is the shot difficulty. Because I mean, you see all these numbers dipping from where he used to be or for he was the past couple of seasons. And yeah, one, he was not being keyed in on, like you said, the way that he is now as a starter. Teams are kind of understanding who he is, and too, yeah, he's just making things too hard on himself. I mean, he's taking ridiculous shots. Like, I mean, the reason he's shooting 26% from three, I can't tell you it's because, you know, he's not open. He's taking off balance, stupid stuff.
I mean, he is missing open shots, but the honest truth is that for his career, he has not been an open shot maker. Look at those stats. He's just not made them. And so far, it's been, we've been excusing that to youth and small sample and blah, blah, blah. He's not been a good, he's not been good from three ever, ever. I just don't know what you do with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I think that we are very, maybe more so than most players, we're very susceptible to riding hot or riding high or just criticizing the guy because he's been so up and down throughout his career and obviously more down than up. And it's frustrating because this, it appears that the skill set's there. I mean, Zach Lowe even wrote about him in his article this past week, and he was, he's spot on. Say what you want about some of the other things you may have said about the other players on the roster or decisions that they made as a team. But I mean, what he said about Nikhil was right. And, you know, he's got to get this, the easier stuff, right, before he starts trying to do the hard stuff. And the thing is, like, especially in that starting lineup between Graham, Ingram and Valanciunas, there's enough offensive talent there that he doesn't have to do all this. I mean, obviously the offense has not done well and there's a correlation there that's Nikhil's play so far, but there's enough guys who can get a bucket at the end of the shot clock and don't need Nikhil taking bad shots with 15 seconds left on the shot clock, you know?
Yeah. Look, I mean, I think it's very easy to fall in love with Nikhil because he has the work ethic. He says the right things. He flashes all of the potential in the world. I mean, some of the stuff he does looks like absolute superstar stuff. Like it's mesmerizing to watch him when he's on a heater. But in between all of that, it's just this inability to do the basic thing. And I say inability because he hasn't done it. And so until he does it, it'll be an inability. And I just don't know what to say to that. The team needs him to be good. I hope this is going to be one of those things where, you know, a rough start to the season, all this attention makes him a better player when he's around other better players. Because we saw this with Lonzo when he was first traded in New Orleans. He looked at like absolute crap. And then he started snapping, you know, a little bit before Zion got back in that late January because he found his flow a little bit. Found confidence in his shot. And then he really clicked when Zion got back. And then that became the kind of the case with him is like without Zion, he just did not look like he could do much of anything. And then when Zion was on, man, this guy looked like he really fit. And so I'm hoping that becomes the case with Nikhil, because if you have a player who can be useful to you and useful to your team when another player is here, that's great. It's not ideal, but it's fine. You can work around that limitation. What you can't work around is if this guy is just going to torpedo your offense and you don't know what you're going to get from him night in and night out, because then you end up in that exact situation you were with Lonzo. Do I pay this guy? Do I rely on a maybe? Do I rely on a coin flip? And you don't want to be there. And while I don't think that, I'd be shocked if, you know, like Nikhil is demanding Lonzo money for his extension coming up this summer. I'd be shocked. He frankly has done nothing to earn it. He doesn't have that kind of the pedigree, and he doesn't have a $14 million qualifying offer to fall back on. But you know, it's one of those things where you have to be mindful of what he can be for your team and how much it's going to cost.
Yeah. If you had the option to give him commit to a full mid level for 4 years for Nikhil right now, would you do it?
Yeah, I'd do it. I think there's a player in there, and I think there's a player that wants to be good.
Yep.
And I think that it just may be that player needs the Zion to unlock him.
But if, yeah, I guess that's the corollary is if he needs Zion to unlock him, is he worth it? You know?
Yeah. I mean, at the mid level, sure.
Yeah. Sure. I think I would too.
Cause he can be like, you know, like on a Zion team, he can be your X factor in a given night because, you know, you're going to get like 27, 30 out of Zion. You know, BI is going to give you what he's going to give you. And now, you know, like Jonas is there and Devontae is a little bit more consistent. He's still inconsistent, but he's more consistent than Nikhil. But, you know, if you're getting all-star Nikhil, then yeah, you can take a good team and look unbeatable those nights. And then, you know, if you're not, you can still be a good team because you have Zion. And I think that's what's kind of got to be the blueprint here, is that he's the one that can, on any given night, make you look like an impossible team to beat.
Did you see what the Bulls did to the Celtics in the fourth quarter just now?
No. Dude, the Celtics are interesting. I want to talk about them. What did they do?
The Bulls were down by like 15 to start the fourth quarter. They outscored Boston 39-11, and they won by 14.
Dude, that is, first of all, incredible. Second of all, Ime Udoka, man, I do not think he is getting through to his stars. I think it's looking like a Stan Van Gundy situation out there. I mean, this is obviously early, right? You're like five games into the season. But the quotes that I see coming out of there, the kind of like blame being put upon the players, he said something about Jaylen Brown, like how it was like mind-boggling, like how you don't know what you're going to get from him like any given night. And I'm like, what the – dude, whatever he's doing out there, those players are not having it. And I'm curious to see if Mr. Brad Stevens is going to stick with MA for after this year, or it's going to be one of those situations where the players force his hand. Cause I don't think it's working, man. I don't think it's working. That's a better roster.
Yeah.
That's a better roster than 2-5.
Yeah. And like Horford's been legitimately good.
Jaylen Brown's been a fucking all-star.
Yeah, I mean, Brown and Tatum and Smart.
Tatum's been mediocre.
Not good. Yeah, not good.
Brown's been great.
Yeah.
Wasn't Schroeder supposed to be like the value signing of the year? I mean, like, I don't know, man. GM Brad Stevens has a way to go. And you know, I wish I could say with any confidence that, like, oh, the Pelicans are going to be good and they're going to poach these players off. No, they're not. It's just not. Which is why they need a fucking tank for this top three pick. And then when one of the Jays ask out, just drop the chest on them. Do it for the Jays.
One of these days. One of these days, they'll be able to unload the clip off with all these picks. But
Daryl Morey calls you and he says, give me Nikhil, Kyra, Josh, and Santoransky, and you can have Ben Simmons. And two picks, and you can have Ben Simmons.
I was about to say immediately. I'm saying yes,
and like and two, and two
be damned,
and two picks, and you can have Ben Simmons. What do you say?
What are the picks?
I don't know. I'd say you could do top five protected this year and a future, I don't know, Bucks pick.
So the pick that's already leaving, if it's.
Oh yeah. So Charlotte already kind of owns that pick. So I guess if you're not top five, it could be the first available Pelicans pick to trade top five protected.
That gets a little dicier. Because if that all goes to shit, then it really goes to shit. I guess if it's protected, that helps. But I mean, I would consider it. I would need to know that Ben Simmons is going to care and try on the Pelicans.
Yo, man, look, if you have a toxic situation on your team where your star is, you know, not buying in and trying, what you need to do to fix it is bring in Ben Simmons. I'm convinced. Yeah.
Seriously. I mean, it's
scary. You need to add Rich Paul to the mix whenever you can, because things go well when you do. And Ben Simmons is that exact player who will turn your culture around.
Yeah. It's like Ben's got his money already. So like,
if this was 2K, I'd say yes.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. And you know what? Even if you went down to like one pick, I could potentially be convinced.
You know what's funny is that like if this was 2K, like nonsense aside, you know, you had Ben Simmons as your starting power forward to start this year, you're probably 4-3.
Huh.
I'd say so.
I don't know. I think that might be a little optimistic, but
you don't think so? Yeah, maybe not.
With that Pelicans team,
Yeah, maybe not.
I don't think they have enough shooting.
Yeah, but they're starting Herbert.
Speaking of, what a great segue.
That dude's fucking awesome.
You know how bad it is that we're 50 minutes into this damn podcast and now we're just talking about the good thing that's happened.
Yeah, we talked about Jonas. But yes,
fair.
Herbert.
That's fair, yeah. But like the most unexpected good thing has to be Herb Jones.
Yes.
Which is
I'm gonna call him Herbert from now. Just till him, you know, forever. Herbert's his name.
Not on Herb.
Just Herbert, man. Herbert. But you know, Mr. Herbert, I hope it's one of those situations where like David Lee gets hurt and they start Draymond, and Draymond's big revelation and really unlocks their team. You know, obviously we don't have any of those kind of shooters, but just the data points were like, oh, we can start Herbert and not look bad. That's kind of cool. Hey, this guy, you can put on literally everybody. You're putting him on Trae Young? Okay. You're putting him on Julius Randle? Okay. You're putting him on Karl Anthony Towns? Okay. I mean, what doesn't this guy do? I'm so excited because everyone's been like, oh, you got to put Zion at the center eventually. And I'm like, no, you need someone else who can do it. And I don't want to get ahead of myself, but they may have found there's someone else. They may have found there's someone else that can play those center minutes in the small ball situations.
Yeah, and it also allows you to be more flexible with how you position BI defensively too. And granted, I think he's taken some meaningful steps forward in the effort department and be able to use his length to create a little bit more disruption this year, but it's still like, Brendingham has a ways to go to be a good defender. And if you can have a guy like Herbert, maybe that'll catch on. I'm still seeing how I feel about Herbert versus Herbert.
Dude, he said he prefers Herbert. They asked him, like, what do you prefer? Yeah, he prefers Herbert. I'm going to respect that man's wishes because if I don't, he's going to lock me out of my house.
Yeah. Fair enough. All right. It gives you more flexibility. And I think he's very far from a lost cause in the shooting department, which is I think sounds like a backhanded compliment, but I guess it is. But
he's made more threes than Jackson Hayes this year with Jackson super shooter Hayes.
Probably more than Najee too, huh?
Oh God, has Najee hit made a basket this year?
Maybe like one, but that's what you need with him. Like if he's going to be this good this quickly defensively. And granted, he's a four-year college guy, so he's not a 19-year-old by any stretch. But if he's this good already, you don't need him to be, you know, Klay Thompson from behind the arc to be viable. And if he can be this versatile defensively, and so I think it's there. The question is, I just really want to see where he can go from here as a rookie. It's so much fun to watch him play basketball. And he's an energizer for the rest of the team too. I think that's important. Like the what he gives on every single possession, I think as his teammate, you feel like it's your responsibility to match his intensity. And so that's the type of guy I want to see on the floor right now for this team.
I think you said everything perfectly because this team looks like they give a shit on defense. And I don't know if this continues when they're 1-15, you know, there's a shelf life to how much guys keep buying in. And if Willie Green can get them to continue to do that while they're a terrible team, then that dude is a saint. But, speaking of which, I kind of like changing the subject slightly, but not slightly, but also continuing to pile on Nikhil a little bit. What does it say that Willie's willing to close with two rookies over that guy? He's closing with his preferred closing lineup now includes Herbert and now Trey, which I like. I love it. I love those two together, and I want as much minutes as possible with those two playing together this season.
I'm enjoying it too. I don't know if I'd read a ton into the Trey bit other than this team needs knockdown shooters in the lineup somewhere, and they really – I don't really know where they have that at all on their team right now. They've got a bunch of decent 3-point shooters. They don't have anyone who like actually scares me besides maybe Devontae because he'll pull up from fucking anywhere. But even that he's shooting in the high 30s. I don't know if he's oh shit level.
He's got a high volume right now. There's just like teams are happy letting him shoot because they're like, yeah, you know, If we give the Pelicans five offensive possessions, they're going to turn it over in one of them, and they're going to miss three of the other shots. So if they're scoring, you know, one out of five times, it's fine. What's going on, basically?
That's what I kind of see. I mean, that's the utility that Murphy has above all else right now. But yeah, I think it's still a fair point to call out that, yeah, Nikhil and Willie Green, totally different guy than Stan Van Gundy, obviously, in a lot of ways, but it still should be noted. And
you know, is this team stealth tanking? Just look at their actions, man. Like, I'm asking in jest, but like,
that was part of the interview process for Willie Green's. Like, if Zion isn't healthy, will you listen to me and play who I want you to play all season?
I mean, look, if Jonas starts mysteriously getting 29 minutes a game and Jackson starts getting more than 20 a game, then the jig is up. We'll be on to them. But I feel like, you know, one thing I will say, I got to commend them. They're using their young players. They're letting them fail. And that's kind of all we asked for last year with Stan. It's like, give them the opportunity to fail. And they're failing, right? I mean, Carver had a pretty good game the other night.
I'd rather watch them fail than Eric Bledsoe fail.
100%. There isn't like a guy on this roster right now where I'm like, bro, why are you getting these minutes? Because Temple, but he's not in the rotation anymore. But I mean, he got hurt, but he's also not in the rotation.
Hurt. Yeah, come on.
Sandoransky is not in the rotation. So it's like, you know, there really isn't this. Even like, I don't feel bad about like Josh Hart stealing minutes from Najee just because I'm like, whatever, man. Najee's been terrible. I don't really care.
And if your plan is to trade Josh Hart, I mean,
you need to showcase
not play him.
Right? Yeah, you need to showcase him. You need to pump up his stats a little bit. Because they've come the deadline and someone's like, oh, we can use a Joshy Hart on our team. Here's a 17th pick in the next draft. Okay, cool. Love that. Take him.
Yeah, man, that would be awesome. I don't buy they're getting that because that contract is just about as combustible on the Hart side as the team side. So he can wiggle out of that one too, right? After the season.
he can. Yeah, he can. You're right.
So
Wait, I think the way I got to fuck, man. I you see how much like I don't give a shit about this anymore. But I was gonna say I think that if the team opts in first, it triggers his. But I could be wrong. I think it's the other way around. I don't know. Whatever, man. Whatever, trade him.
Yeah, and like Kyra too. Like I was, talking about just letting guys fail. I think. You know, I missed the first few games, like I said, and it was brought to my attention that Satoransky was just like awful. And so not that Kyra's been a revelation. He played really well last game, but he, generally speaking, he hasn't been that good either. But if neither one's going to be good, play the young guy. So I feel like, you know, maybe I don't buy that Satoransky is just cooked. He's 30 and he's been a valuable rotation player in his career, not a starter, but a good rotation player.
Probably an injury they're not telling us about.
God, bringing it back full circle, huh?
Yep.
I think at full strength I would have liked to see him in the rotation and gotten to play through the growing pains with this new team. But because like he was the Bulls pretty much his whole career in the NBA, right?
No, bro, he was with the Wizards and my boy Beal.
Oh, right. That was a big whiff. He was the Wizards first. I don't know. I think he would be he should be a rotation player for this Pelicans team if they're fully healthy, because I don't believe he would continue to be this bad. But right now, whatever. Kyra it is. And he turned it up a notch this last game, and we'll see if he can get.
Yeah, man. Forward. Just give him all the opportunities to be on the ball. Like, let him go against the Pat Beverleys of the world and learn. And tell him that he has a green light. Tell that boy that he needs to score because no one else is doing it. Yeah, I got nothing else on Kara. Just keep on doing you, man. If all of this leads us into a great pick, fantastic. And you know, like, people can yell at me all they want. I'm very clear about my desires for the season, and it's the best possible assets. That's it. That's all I want out of this season. And then, and obviously, like, no one else to get hurt, right? Like, health, yada, yada, yada. whatever. I'm calling it in the name of Preston. Doing it in your honor, buddy. Season is over.
I can't wait till we have our next podcast and we're basically just talking about contracts that we're willing to take on in exchange for.
Knowing us, you know, they're gonna go on like a mini 3-game win streak and we're like, oh no.
Pelicans are back, baby.
Pelicans are back, baby. Zion's around the corner.
They're gonna have one win against the team they have no business beating. And
it's gonna be the Suns tomorrow, and then they're gonna beat the Kings, and then I don't even know who they're playing next.
Herbert's gonna hit like 5 threes.
Oh my god.
No, the Suns are kind of like not doing that hot right now, huh?
Yeah. Well, they're their own kind of toxic mess. They did not pick up Jalen Smith's third-year option, which is, whew. I mean, that's the 10th overall pick right there. And then not that he was like a good player that they're missing out on. It's just that like they also gave him absolutely no opportunity. This would be like the Pelicans saying right now, we don't want Kyra next year. Right now, you know, after the year he had with Stan not giving him any opportunity, and then in the preseason, and then be like, yep, see you, Kyra. Because they were the same draft class. It's kind of ridiculous.
I think what's going to – just because the Pelicans are the Pelicans, what's going to happen is they're going to go either 2-2 or 3-1 over the next four games and then lose to Oklahoma City.
Oh, baby. I want to say 0-4. 0-4. Prove me wrong, Pelicans.
because they got, believe it or not, they got two of the next three games are national TV games. Not that anyone is going to be awake for it. they're at Phoenix on TNT tomorrow night and then at Golden State on Friday night. And yeah, they're,
I just saw an amazing tweet. Ime Udoka is just Doc Rivers married to Nia Long. Oh my God. That is an amazing tweet. The Bulls went on a 38-9 run. Oh my God.
Well, 39-11 was the quarter score.
Oh my God. That's incredible.
It's something.
You know, one thing I'm going to take a small victory over. I was very high on Kyra. He's not been very good so far, but neither has Aaron Nesmith. And that was a guy I was not very high on. And boy, Celtics fans are melting down over Nesmith.
When was he picked? What number was he?
He was 14. So Kyra was 13. He was 14.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. Anywho, I have talked enough about this team that does not reward me for talking about it. And I'm going to stop talking about it until the next time we record. And so I wish I could say that we were going to have better things to talk about next time. You know what I think? I think we should just pivot to just bringing on guests and just talk, like bringing on interesting people and having them talk, because clearly this fucking team, I'm serious, man. Look, I'm going to start hitting up all the media folks. We start hitting up coaches. We're going to get some folks on you, because I think fans deserve better, and they deserve better than us talking about a trash team.
I wasn't sure if you were going to get even just separate entirely from the sport of basketball. It's like, no. Chats,
we'll talk about Mason basketball. And yeah, basketball. No, this is Malcolm Gladwell. Yeah. Anywho, thanks for listening, folks. And hopefully we can do better and bring on some interesting folks.